Welcome to In Between Expats, and thank you for listening to the show. My name is Rodrigo Bravo, and let's get started. I start this episode by thanking all those who have listened to this podcast. To my surprise, In Between Expats has been downloaded in 52 countries in all continents. Special thanks to my listeners in the United States, Czech Republic, India, and the United Kingdom. If you wish to share your story as an expat or former expat, please write to me at inbetweenexpats@gmail.com or follow me on Facebook and Instagram at inbetweenexpats. This is the story of Payam Razi, who left his native Iran at the age of 21 to live in India. Eventually, he landed in Prague as he was accepted in the prestigious film school known as FAMU. Payam talks about his work at Radio Free Europe, his movies, life in Prague, and the opening of his art house Screenshot in late 2019. Payam wanted to show a variety of films from different countries, have two bars, and even a dance floor, all in one place. So Screenshot opened its doors, but the pandemic forced Payam to shut them for the third time as of November 2021. This episode is in part about resilience, how an expat entrepreneur won't give up, but needs help to keep his business running. If you wish to donate money to Screenshot, please contact Payam directly at payam.razi@gmail.com. Salam. Khaled chitore? Khosh amadid.
Salam, Rodrigo. Kheli mamnunam. Hi, Rodrigo. Good morning. Thank you for having me here.
I guess I have to translate. Hello, Payam. How are you? And welcome. Welcome to the show, Payam. How are you doing
today? Thank you very much. Man khubam. It means I'm doing fine. And I'm happy to be with you and your listeners.
The pleasure is all mine. As many may have noticed, you are from Iran. You are Persian. And I usually start by asking my guests about their birthplace. And we'll get to that. I learned of Screenshot right before the pandemic. I've heard very good comments from people, from friends of mine here in Prague. This is your business. Please tell me about Screenshot. What is it about?
From an original idea, which got its shape around 4 years ago, regarding the time we are all dealing with, the idea from back then to now has been transformed relatively in a very short time frame, within 3-4 years, so many times.
I imagine.
And I had to adapt in so many different ways with the situation and try to keep it sort of alive. It's nice that you have read nice comment about it, but the Screenshot as a place, ideally in my head, it was always a place that the film geeks, film nerds, and cinema lovers in general, they gather. They gather to watch films, to discuss films, and alongside enjoy having a nice cocktail and occasionally have good music with what this venue is offering.
How did you decide to open this place and why?
I have been living in Prague for about 15 years now. I came to this country to study. I'm sure we get to that a bit later. I finished my studies through a lot of different stories. I started working for over 13 years. And as many people feel, after a certain time that you spend your daily hours in a certain position, you start dreaming of freeing yourself and creating an idea that you have had. And the idea of breaking that pattern of being an employee to create my own space, it ended to become a Screenshot as it is today.
A couple of questions. What kind of movies do you play?
One thing that I was, since the beginning, very keen to achieve is that when you have a screening room which is not functioning as a cinema, you obviously come with the freedom of choice. If your venue is not running on ticket sale, if it's not depending on how many film goers are at the place, and your business plan is to finance your screenings by creating other events or running bars, then you get to a certain freedom to choose what sort of films you're going to screen. And beside that, the type of films you decide to screen, it characterizes what sort of place you are. As an art house cinema, I just in the beginning had the idea that there is a gap in Prague or in Czech Republic that I wanted to fill in. And that was that there were plenty of valuable, historic, old, new films around the world that when they were coming to this country, they were all coming with Czech subtitles. And for the large number of expats in the city, at least in our city, Prague, a chance to see these films with English subtitle, a Korean film with English subtitle, a Spanish film, a film from Latin America with English subtitle, and being updated with what's new, or even historic films which were played in various cinemas in Prague, was missing. And to achieve that, I did not start right away by showing international films. I started a screenshots program with reviewing the top 50 films of the Czechoslovak cinematography history, mm-hmm. and offered them all with English subtitles. In a way, I wanted to pay my respect to the country that I have built a screenshot in by starting our program with Czech and Slovak cinema, and also introduce a screenshot as a place that consider its main target English-speaking communities in our city.
Have you showcased movies from your own country, from Iran?
I have been lucky to be a part of Iran Sea Film Festival, which is one of the most successful film festivals happening in Prague. The ninth edition of Iran Sea happened just about 4 months after I opened the screenshot. The director of the festival is a very close and good friend of mine, and he suggested that the screenshot becomes one of the cinemas that they present the works of the festival that year, 2020. And we have been lucky to screen over 20 valuable films that year. And this is my experience with the Iranian cinema. Unfortunately, due to pandemic, the 10th edition of the festival did not take place. And we are still unsure if the 11th edition in January 2022 will happen.
I hope it does. The reason why I ask you about a Persian film is I've watched a couple of films. It's a very, very distinct, very different type of cinema, very character-based. I saw the movie Offside from 2006, the story of a girl who wanted to go to see a World Cup qualifier football match in Tehran and what she had to do in order to go in. Very interesting. And I believe these are the type of things that are dealt with in Persian film, no?
I would just want to distinguish between the Iranian film style or the topics. Iran by itself is quite a complex society. There are plenty of amazing stories. You see so many films having amazing stories, something that in the West we might not even think about.
Correct.
But the style of filmmaking, which is very much talked about as Iranian approach to storytelling, let's say, it is the result of a lot of consequences from the revolution in Iran and the limitations that they were imposed on Iranian cinema, and the struggle of filmmakers to achieve a new language to express freely without being censored what they have in mind. And so I distinguish these two with each other. Panahi, the director of Offside, the film you just mentioned, is actually one of the pioneers of that cinema. He's someone who has been trained and worked alongside the great filmmaker Abbas Kiarostami. Like many other Iranian filmmakers in the last 10 years, he dedicated his cinema basically to point out a lot of injustice and inequality in the society of Iran these days.
Pivoting a little bit amid the worst of the pandemic, I mean, we could be entering the worst of it still, but screenshot resurfaced because you asked people to help it stay afloat. I saw that people reacted very, very well to your request. Tell me about that journey.
To be honest, at the time that we are doing this interview, we are almost about to hit the third lockdown. I mean, as you said, I hope that doesn't happen, but it doesn't look very good.
It doesn't.
No, and this is quite unfortunate. I have to say, in general, I have been quite unlucky. I would not want to discourage anybody who wants to create such place, because the circumstances I have been dealing with since I opened the screenshot, they are quite unusual. During the last lockdown we had, I was between making two choices, making an important decision. I was not in a very good place. I was quite in a dark place. I left my previous job. I opened a place that very quickly had to be shut down 4 months after the opening. Just to battle these feelings, I started thinking of what I can do in the venue, and I started rebuilding the place by myself. I had to learn things that I didn't know I'm capable of doing, from piping to electricity to cement, beton, name it. And I redesigned what was originally there in order to be ready for the end of lockdown and reopening. But when it was getting to that point, I just realized with the financial data I have at the moment, I wouldn't be able to run it. So the idea of creating a fundraising campaign came from there with the help of a friend. And we shot a video. And I think one reason that people liked the video and they responded quite well to at least the video was that there was a lot of honesty in there. And as a business, we did not look like we are planning to come back in order to be financially successful. But what I had in mind, I wanted to bring a screenshot back to the people that I knew, love, and appreciated. And for that matter, people really turned well toward our campaign. However, I have to say that we did not financially get to a place that we were hoping for. But so much love and support from friends and family and people also from industry that they knew how difficult it is to come back for the second time within 1 year from basically zero. It gave me enough courage to restart the screenshot back in August.
Usually I ask guests who are entrepreneurs what advice they would give people under normal circumstances on how to start a business. In this case, I would ask you, like, where do you get the resilience to just keep on going? Because as you mentioned, this could be the third time that you have to close.
Honestly, I have been asking this question from myself quite many, many times. Beside many factors that can be financial or a perspective toward future, I think I just did not like to fail. There was this strong need in me that wanted to prove that I was right and this place is going to work. Obviously, when you are dealing with a situation like now, like a pandemic, which is out of your control, then when you're facing it for the third time, then you might just say, you know what, you have done what you could. And obviously, this is not your fault and you did not fail. But I did not want this place that I spend a lot of time, it's not about money, a lot of time creating it in my head first and then a lot of time building it with my own hand. I did not want this place to disappear.
In a previous conversation, Payam, I told you that places like yours are sorely needed in Prague. There are a lot of places where people can go to, but I think you have a very unique concept, and I certainly hope that it will continue. This wave will pass, and hopefully people will continue getting vaccinated, and people will be able to start moving around once again. But
thank you very much. Thank you.
I mean it sincerely. Let's go back. You're originally from Iran, and I've read that you come from a very artistic family. What was it like growing up in Tehran?
I was born in quite a turbulent time. It was just after the Islamic Revolution in Iran, and the war with Iraq literally just began as I was born. I was born in Tehran, and Tehran was quite far from the battlefield. Obviously, as a 1, 2, 3 years old child, I couldn't really feel it. But the instability, the sense of fear, obviously, was around. I learned about it and understood it years later. But regardless of what was happening to the country or in the country, when you look at your childhood now, when you're 40, as I am right now, and you have had certain experiences, the memories of childhood are quite still pleasant and peaceful. My father, who is a cinematographer and a filmmaker, he had a very, very important role in creating these memories for me and my younger brother, who is also an artist. We had a house full of good music, and we were always encouraged to do art. And I think for any child, having a parent who is so supportive is eventually turning to have some artistic results.
So you grew up around a lot of music, a lot of art. I would imagine that a young Persian filmmaker would want to go straight to Los Angeles, New York, London. Why did you come to the Czech Republic?
Well, let's say when I was 15, 16 years old, moving to Europe, moving to Paris for an artist was priority rather than moving to US. US was always a country, as is known around the world, the country of opportunities, mostly for people who were looking for financial achievements in life. But for people who had artistic goals, Europe was always the place to go and study. However, even at that time, because I was quite young when I was introduced through, of course, my father and common friends to the film industry, I started working officially as assistant director. I did feature films and 7,000 minutes of TV series. I was a part of this industry already. And even back then, I knew that I would like to continue my filmmaking career inside the country because there is a lot of enthusiasm in Iran about cinema. There is quite a big industry. So my idea generally was to go study abroad, travel, and go back to Iran and continue my filmmaking there.
So it's not in your plan to settle abroad?
I did not see this day. Today, I think, is about 20 years since I have left Iran. And yeah, I did not see that I spent 20 years of my life abroad. I did not see that day coming. And that is also due to decisions I made in life and the circumstances that happened to me, especially in Prague, that caused me to stay here for such a long time.
I must revert to the question, why Prague? I mean, there is a very good film school, FAMU, here in Prague. What was it like for you at the beginning in this country? And what kind of culture shock did you go through?
Well, speaking of cultural shock, I have to say that at the age of 21, another incident caused me to think about my future. At that time, I was reading a lot of spiritual work by Krishnamurti, and I was very drawn to the Eastern spirituality. So I decided to go and travel in India. Mm-hmm. Within 3 years, I think I traveled from Kathmandu to Himalaya, and then I ended up in south of India where the life was pleasant and relaxed. And within 6 months after that, although I was creating a documentary, I made a documentary about the hippie market in South India, European hippies who moved there from 60s and 70s.
To Goa?
And in Goa, in South Goa. And then I really had the desire to create something. So I started making candles and selling them in the market at the same time. And there was a day that I remember looking at the sunset on the ocean, and I remembered the whole idea I had of traveling and questioned myself, why am I there? And why am I spending my life that way? What is going to happen to my filmmaking career? And I took my motorcycle and I drove the day after for about 40 minutes to get to an internet cafe. And I created a resume and I put all my films in there, and I sent it to 7 film schools around the world, from New York, London, Paris, Sydney, and Prague. A week later, when I went to check my emails in that internet cafe, I just saw an email from FAMU that they gave me the admission to come and study at the international program. I was familiar with filmmakers from Czech. I was familiar with, at the time, Forman. I knew writing of Kundera and also a lot of Polish filmmakers. And I thought, this is the right place to go. And I came here. And from February 2006, I am here in Prague. I think India, at least for the first year, was a bigger cultural shock for me than Prague. But coming to Prague, I have to say that I did not expect, first thing, I did not expect the city to be so small.
Right.
For the first 6 months, I was under the impression that I'm in a small place and I'm quite disconnected from the rest of the world.
For context, we have to say that Prague has 1.2 million inhabitants. So.
Sure. I mean, at that time, I think it was about 900,000. Language, of course, it became a very serious barrier at the beginning. You can imagine that back in 2006, much less people were speaking English than now. And the only place that I felt comfortable, it was obviously the school and We were a group of international students from everywhere, and we had quite intelligent and helpful professors at FAMU. So that became my family, and that was the reason that I extended my studies and I finished a longer film by the end of 2008.
The weather didn't shock you?
I came here in February. I knew it's going to be cold, I have to say. But being in a cold and empty city right at the... I arrived on Friday and I thought it would be a nice night to go out and see the nightlife. And I remember walking around the center and I was shocked how quiet and empty the streets were. Especially maybe coming from India that... You barely find any road, any street empty. That was quite a shock, I have to say.
If you were to talk to your 21-year-old self or any young person, not just out of Iran, but anywhere who is planning to move abroad, not just to Czech Republic, but anywhere else, what advice would you give them?
Frankly, it is very important from where people want to immigrate or to move somewhere else. Iran, obviously, and Iranians, young Iranians, they have been facing with a lot of difficulties regarding getting visas to travel due to the sanctions or finding a proper place to grant them an admission to study. I would always say, at least this works for me, it's not an advice, but moving somewhere, if it's a long-term plan, as early as possible is better because you are capable of adapting yourself to a new culture, new environment, much easier.
Certainly, it's a lot easier without a family, wife, sure, children, etc. What are your favorite places in Prague? Could be restaurants or historical places. What are your go-to places? Besides screenshot, of course.
Interestingly, or sadly, I have to say that since the screenshot has been open, I have been less and less and less in other places. I live in Prague 7 in Letná. This is a neighborhood I really, truly love. And I spend a lot of time, obviously, because I have a dog, in these beautiful parks in this neighborhood.
Yes.
Stromovka and Letná Park are two seriously of my favorite places to be. That's where I actually get the chance to think through things that I am generally when I'm working, I do not get the chance. A lot of great ideas came to me in these two places. And I actually shot a film also in Stromovka about 3 years ago called Chapter 5. Beside that, Café Liberal is one of the historic and nice places in Holešovice that I really appreciate going every sometime.
Prague 7 is fantastic for those who don't know Prague. A couple of museums, a lot of these old school movie theaters, bars.
Yes, let's not forget the Bio Oko also in Prague 7.
Exactly.
I think so far is my favorite art house cinema in Prague.
And a lot of artists live there. It used to be cheap. It's gone like everything else, gentrified. It's a common theme, I would say, among expats.
Absolutely. I remember I came here because of a good classmate I had in FAMU right when I arrived. And he was introducing Letná to me at that time. And to me, Letná looked like a neighborhood in the other side of the river.
That's right.
So far away. You know. And even when I moved to Letná, I was always considering myself being really far from the center. It took me some time to realize that within 15 minutes walk, I'm right where the center is. And right now, as you rightly mentioned, is considered to be center, is very popular and extremely expensive.
It used to be industrial and pretty rundown just a few years back. But tell me, Payam, what's Chapter 5 about? And what kind of films are you most interested in making?
Frankly, when it comes to having an idea to make a film, you really don't think about the type of it. It comes to you as a motivating story, as something that excites you. And most of the time, I think when filmmakers, they are excited about a story or they have a story, the type or the storytelling style, it comes with it. So basically, you can just say they are personal if you want to put them in some sort of types, but they come from a personal place, but they are intending to relate to everyone. Chapter 5 was a short film it was an interesting experience. About 6 years ago, in one evening, I was at the park walking with my dog, and I saw a great number, about 500-600 runners through the night with the torch on their head, going around the park, and they all passed by me. And visually, this was mesmerizing. So I decided to write something and put my actor in among the crowd the year after. And from there, with the idea of blindness and with the theme that the only ones in the dark see the light, we created the story of an optometrist who is dealing with his own blindness.
You touched on the fact that you were an employee for many years. And your employer, it's a pretty interesting place, Radio Free Europe. And you worked in the Farsi-speaking section. Can you define it, please? And did you feel at the time that you were helping create some sort of freedom movement in your country or changing opinions, things like this?
The story of me joining Radio Free Europe by itself is kind of a funny story. And at the time, I had a film at FAMU that took me to a program in Berlinale, Berlin Film Festival. And when I went to Berlin for the first time from Prague, I completely fell in love with the city. And I thought that, okay, this is my plan. I have 6 months in Prague. I have to find a job. And within 6 months or a year, I'm going to plan to move to Berlin because I want to have that experience too before I go back to Iran. So within that 6 months back in Prague, I taught a little English in a summer school to 5 to 6 years old kids. But to survive until I managed to move to Berlin, I talked to a few colleagues back then, friends who were working at Radio Free Europe, to see if there is a possibility that I can work for Radio Free Europe and Radio Farda, the Persian speaking service of the establishment. And so I got a call from Radio Free Europe a week later that if I'm interested to join the team, I can be working as a studio technician for live programs. I accepted the job because at the time I was kind of happy that my name is not going to be aired. It was clear that if your name is aired, then you are probably listed as an Iranian working for enemies, according to Iranians' propaganda machine. I had to make another decision. And before I get to that point, there was a possibility to travel to Washington and bring the music department from Washington, which was not working as the management desired by the time, to Prague. Within 3 months, we had launch music from Prague, which was completely a different program. And I have to say, at the time, this is about 2009, at the time that this transformation was happening, there were not so many Iranian media that Iranians inside Iran pay attention to. And Radio Farda, the Persian service of Radio Free Europe, was one of the most important sources of free news and free information. And so this transformation was overwhelmingly positive by our listeners. And so from that moment, I got completely engaged with this role as editor-in-chief of music. And I started having other team members, and the team grew. And we started creating more and more diverse programs. And this was coincided by the time that the Green Movement in Iran was taking place. And I remember that I felt extremely great to be where I was, because it was very evident that what we produced at Radio Free Europe at that time, it was received, it was affecting, it was important to Iranians. And at that moment, I felt proud of the role I have to be part of such important media. This position was very much engaging, and I spent about 13 years running it until I thought that to grow and to achieve and reach higher goals, I have to take risks. And to pass this stage of my life, I have to let it go and open myself to new opportunities.
Is the show still running?
The music department is still on, but my personal show, which I had it for 5 years, it was finished before I leave the radio.
The building of Radio Free Europe used to stand at the top of Wenceslas Square, right next to the National Museum. Were you there or at the new site?
Yes, yes. I got hired when the radio building was still next to museum. Yes.
I'll tell you a funny story. And to give the radio station some context, right after 9/11, they put tanks surrounding the building. They said to protect Radio Free Europe, but I don't think they did such a good job because, and this is a little bit of Czech humor, during the night, some kids disassembled part of the tank and left the pieces on the floor. Nobody knew who it was, and people immediately realized that RFE wasn't that well protected. But I'm happy that they changed the site to another location.
For a city and a country who suffered tanks before and had such a police state before, it was an ugly sight. It was quite unpleasant to walk in and out of that building at the time, I remember. We were kind of ashamed.
And it's actually interesting because that building is from the brutalist period of architecture in this country. And a lot of people were saying, well, if terrorists decide to take out this really ugly building, I'm okay with that, as long as they build something nicer. But seriously speaking, yeah, it did look horrible to see military presence right in the smack in the center of the city.
You're right. And I don't know if you know about the building, but the building itself was headquarter of a communist party before the revolution.
Yes.
Here. There were half floors existing in that building. There were floors that some elevator would stop there. It was like the floor 4.5, 3.5. And they were scary, scary corridors. I don't know what was happening there before, but it was certainly a very, very interesting building.
But flash questions, top three directors and top three movies.
I kind of really avoid this kind of questions because I change a lot. I go to the different periods of different filmmakers that I really appreciate. And, you know, I just kind of feel like this is the best. And then I see some other work. I say, no, this is the best. I started a project, my debut feature film project that I'm really, really for the last 2-3 years drawn to. And it is happening in North Pole. Because of my project, I started watching a lot of Vinterberg, the Danish filmmaker, films. And The Hunt is one of my absolute favorite films. Zviatnitsev, the Russian director of Leviathan, is one of my favorite directors as well. And Leviathan itself is one of the masterpieces of last 10 years, in my opinion. To a different extent, Abbas Kiarostami, the Iranian filmmaker, has always touched me. And for those listeners that they did not see any of his films, I would maybe recommend to see Taste of Cherry.
What books do you recommend? It could be about anything, about film, Iran, or whatever interests you.
Recently, what I read is generally related to the projects that I am interested to work on. At the moment, I'm reading a book by Michel Welbeck. It's called Serotonin. It was recommended by a very good Czech friend of mine, a writer himself. And I'm in the middle, but I have to say I got really scared because the main character is, and his habits are so similar to me. I think my friend knows me quite well. That's why he recommended the book to me. And also I am reading a book written by an Iranian young writer who I recently had the pleasure to meet. And I'm hopeful that in the future we get along more than now and work on a few projects that we discussed. Translation of the name of the book, which is a collection of short stories, is The Alphabet of Gravediggers. And I am mesmerized by how talented this young writer Hadi Kekabusi is. So these are the two books on the top of my head that I am engaged with at the moment.
Fantastic. And with so many projects going on, do you ever see yourself living anywhere else?
At least I dream of it. I have to say that the pressure of last 3 years, not only related to pandemic, but generally, I learned when you start your own business, you're going to be under immense pressure. Pandemic added to the pressure, of course. Many times I dream of South India where I felt free, relaxed, and full of energy. I keep dreaming of going back there. I never stop dreaming of going back to Iran, not necessarily to Tehran, but to magnificent corners of Iran that I have magical memories of how beautiful the nature was in four corners of Iran. But I have to say, at the moment, I am unsure about what's going to happen with the screenshot. I don't know if we fall for the third time, there is a chance to lift up everything once again. And I don't know if we do that, how many years of hard work and struggle would be ahead to make it run smoothly. So the idea of maybe leaving Prague for at least some time, it is becoming more relevant to think of these days.
Once again, I do hope that once this terrible pandemic subsides, screenshot will come back. You have a very good concept. Are there any last words that you would like to tell the audience before we said goodbye? And by the way, even though I'm not Persian, I have noticed that there are more Persians in Prague. Growing up in Southern California, I had Persian friends and I really fell in love with the food. I know that there's a place in Karlin where they have good sultani and tadi and right. All this stuff.
That's right. No, that's a good place. I mean, that's a good place and that's the only place for many
exactly.
years. from 2006, of course, it was impossible to think of having some Persian food in town. But since Aubergine, this restaurant exists, well, a lot of people end up there. It's a great place with great food, of course. But coming from a different country as an expat in Prague, who happened to be also an American, who traveled in Asia and even Latin America, I have to say that the one thing that by age I understand much better, and also such negative incident in our life like Corona and the pandemic, has shown this positive, let's say, or unifying picture of how well connected we human beings are, or how interconnected life among us is something that it constantly goes in my head. I think this was something that a lot of people mentioned, that when it comes to something like pandemic, we just realize how equal all of us are. Borders, they lose their meanings. Or nationalities, or languages, or races, or religions, they all become irrelevant when we all face the same problem. And that is something that I really appreciate, that most people started to think of, or they find themselves in a position of equality with the others. And so if you do not mind, I finish this wonderful talk with you. We spoke a lot about Iran and Persian culture with a tiny poetry of a very well-known Iranian poet who wrote this poem over 700 years ago, Saadi Shirazi. He's from Shiraz and is literally, in beautiful words, he said the same thing as I tried to express. He wrote, "Human beings are a member of a whole, in creation of one essence and soul. If one member is afflicted with pain, other members uneasy will remain. If you have no sympathy for human pain, the name of human you cannot retain."
Payam, I want to thank you once again for having shared your story as an expat, as an entrepreneur, and as a communicator. I wish you all the best. I do hope that all your projects will come to fruition. And certainly, it'll be very nice to meet you, whether in Letna or at Screenshot. It'll be a pleasure to meet you. We started with Farsi, so we'll end it with Farsi. Payam, merci, khodafes. I would say other words in Farsi, but they are not the most polite ones. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you very much, Rodrigo. Merci, kheli mamnoon. I wish we meet in person. I wish we pass this upcoming obstacle once again, and I wish I see you and I host you in a screenshot once all this is over.
All the best. Bye-bye. Thank you once again for listening, and I hope you'll join me in the next episode. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate the show, and leave your comments. If you want to write to me, my address is inbetweenexpats@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just type @inbetweenexpats. Until next time, take care.